And welcome into the Friday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth back in the chair this morning here on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We've got a loaded show for you here today. Lots to get to on the Nashville Predators today. We'll also talk Titans as well. Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, drops by at 8 o'clock. Terry Crisp at 8:30, and our man David Ubben from The Athletic at 9 o'clock with the latest on Tennessee and their football program. Lots to get into with David at 9 as well. And then, of course, Call Your Shot Friday, weekend winners taking place today as well. So a lot on the table, and we'll take your thoughts all show long on our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe Rexroad, how we doing?
Great. All I have to say to you is Preds 2, Florida 1. Won the third period.
Okay.
Today is going to be Positive Spin Friday.
Yes, Positive Spin Friday, baby. We're all about some positivity here on this Friday. Ryan Porth, welcome back to the show today. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. And, Joe, I'm positive that I'm tired of seeing the Preds come out and, you know, get their butts kicked in the first period. Wow. That's my positive spin.
I'm trying to provide some sunshine, and you're just going to come right in and cloud it up, man. I'll tell you what. It was still early. It was three zip. It was early. They were in there.
They made it close.
They did. They fought.
It was early. Another loss for the Predators last night, 5-4 at the hands of the Florida Panthers, and a very similar script to what we've seen a lot of this season, Joe, in that the Predators came out, and it was as ugly as it's probably been all year long in the first 20 minutes of the game. It was 2-0 after the first period. Florida adds a quick one to go up 3-0 in the second period. It could have been literally 5 or 6-0 in the first period. Adam Vingan, I think, came out with a stat after the first period that the slot shots were 11-1 in favor of Florida. So they're getting all sorts of good looks, all sorts of good scoring chances. The Predators not generating much of anything on the other side of the ice. To their credit, they're able to fight back in the second period, and in the third they play really well, and they make it close, but ultimately lose 5-4. Just these consistent starts where they're just nowhere to be found offensively. And then last night, some of the turnovers they had, it was just another chapter of a theme that's become all too common for them this year.
That, you know, just watching in general, one team looked so much faster than the other team.
So much faster.
And I know it's a, you know, I mean, they're a fast team, but still. There was a pretty big contrast, you know, just watching these two teams. But yeah, then you have some of the mistakes in there. And again, I actually, in all seriousness, I do give the Preds credit for fighting back in this season when they were 6-10 and in this game. But like the slow starts are, I mean, it's hard to like excuse at this point, right? Like if you talk about something this much, and it's all anybody talks about. I mean, I guess it's kind of like the power play a couple years ago, but that's still different. That's like, that's more of a, I mean, you got to have that skill, that touch, that finesse, you know, the right combination of chemistry. I don't think there's any excuse for being this bad early in games every time out. Like some of that can be effort, can be, you know, grit, grind, whatever, and they don't find it. And then they come back when a team has a big lead on them.
And it's becoming Groundhog Day a little bit in the press conferences because obviously, like, this has been a consistent theme with this team. And John Hines was asked last night after the game about yet another slow start for the Predators in the first period and why that continues to be the case and how you can go about fixing it. Here is what Predators head coach John Hines had to say.
Yeah, you know, it's back-to-back games here where we obviously got down early in the first, and it's just urgency in our play. It's, you know, that's really what it comes down to is, you know, even you look at tonight, I mean, it could have been 3-4-0 in the first, you know, probably 7 minutes of the game. And it, you know, it comes down to if you want to, I mean, we can't get into every other game, but in tonight's game, you know, we gave up odd man rushes. Our D were pinching at the wrong time. Our forwards had to reload a little bit more. It comes to the urgency that you need to be able to play with to establish the game. And, you know, I respect the fact that we, you know, we stay with it and we find ways to get, you know, get ourselves back in the game, get it close. But, you know, when the game starts, it's every team's fresh, everyone's hungry, everyone's ready to go. And the urgency level that we're playing with and the competitiveness that we're playing with in the first period is not close to being good enough.
So why is that the case?
Not close to being good enough. I mean, think, well, those words, not close to being good enough.
Okay, but why is that the case? Like, if that is truly what it is and the urgency is not there, I just don't buy that the urgency is not there all the time. And I tweeted this out last night, and I think this is starting to be the explanation with more each game that goes by. I said the consistent bad starts make more sense with each passing game. The explanation is pretty simple. This team's just not very good, and the blitz that comes in the third period just starts to look more and more like a team that maybe is taking advantage of another team sitting back on a lead. We talked about that a little bit yesterday in terms of, all right, how much of it is the Predators just coming alive in the third period and looking like a different team, and how much it is the opposition on a multi-goal lead kind of sitting back, maybe not as urgent as they were to begin the game. I mean, I think maybe it's a combination of the two, but you hear those words from John Hines, and some of the players were asked about it last night too, and they just have no answer for it. I mean, there's no sense of direction of what's going on out there in the first period. And look, I think if there was like a concrete reason that they could point to, they would have probably fixed it by now. But I just don't buy that it's a lack of urgency. Like, if it is, and that's a consistent problem with this team, you got a much bigger problem than I thought, because at some point pride needs to take over, and you need to be a little bit more urgent in the first period if that's the problem.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, Florida's better and looked way better, so maybe it's like, okay, both teams are fresh, both, you know, you're starting at zero. The better team's going to look like the better team, okay? So that's part of it. But if John Hines says all these intangible things you need are not close to enough, why is he saying that? If what is he just like the – I mean, you hear this all the time.
Is that not his job?
Well,
it's your job to get the team ready.
Yeah.
That doesn't speak well of you if that's happening consistently.
Is that what coaches do in the NHL?
Well, it is part of your job to make sure your team is ready to go, whether it's getting them motivated or whether it's just tactically a game plan. And if you're having this big of an issue to start games and your team is, in your words, not close to being good enough competitively, that doesn't speak well of you.
It doesn't. It doesn't. It's one of those things, though, again, and this is more usually players after games. A lot of times you hear that, well, it wasn't them.
Right.
It was the stuff we did. You know, we didn't do this, this, and this right. We let them win. Now, no one can just admit, yeah, they kicked our butt. They're just way better than us. Like, we're not very good. They kicked our butt, right. You know. Is that John Hines right now? Is he doing that a little bit? Or is Maybe. He actually seeing just a team that comes out like a dead fish? Because, I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. It is on the coach. The coach runs the whole show. So there is some motivation involved in this. Obviously, Peter Laviolette has like wolf masks and karate outfits and whatever. And it seems to work for him, at least to a certain point. But I would say, like, last night, if you just take that one game, I watched a way better team load up, get a big lead on a way inferior team, and then, like you said, in the third period, okay. I mean, the Preds fought back, but that's how a lot of these games are, I think. It's just teams have multi-goal leads on them, and that happens a lot.
Well, and I saw this a little bit on Twitter last night, too. I don't really want to hear about the two goals that were disallowed from the Predators. You're offside on one of them. If the referee does his job, that play is never allowed to continue, and you don't score anyway. And on the second one, I mean, you've got a slashing penalty right before it. So, yeah, I mean, you scored two goals that got disallowed. I mean, neither one of them should have counted by the letter of the law. So I don't really spend a whole lot of time thinking about goals that were waved off when neither one of them should have counted.
Yeah. Your team got your team got outclassed, and that's going to happen a lot here moving forward against the schedule. It's just how it is. So, you know, that's stuff like that is It's avoiding the big picture.
It is. And look, I think part of the frustration with Predators fans is there seems to be the last few years like one big issue with this team that just continues to be a problem. And it's been different by the season. Like, even in the President's Trophy season, like, they could not stay out of the box. They couldn't do it. They were always on the penalty kill. And to their credit, they were good enough to be able to overcome that. And then, you know, the power play, the special teams issues the year after that. Last year, it was a combination of a lot of different things. Power play continued to be an issue. The penalty kill, especially to begin the season last year, was just awful for the Predators. They've corrected special teams a little bit this year, even though it wasn't a great night last night. But right now, this consistent theme of just not being there to play in the first period, it just feels like the last few years with this group, there's always something that is an issue and a consistent issue that they just can't figure out throughout the course of a season.
That they can't fix, yeah.
They have a negative 13 goal differential in the first period alone. They've scored 11 goals, they've given up 24. And that's the second worst first period goal differential in the league, only behind Ottawa.
That's not the company you want to be in.
No.
Yeah, well, I mean that's the territory they're in general, you know?
Yeah, I mean 10-13-0 on the season, and we knew it. I mean, you even got some good news yesterday. Like, Johansson was back, so obviously he did not test positive for COVID because you miss one game, you're back in there. Brad Richardson got back in there. He had an assist. I mean, you feel like you were maybe in a better spot getting some bodies back. Orvietsky was back in there as well. And I didn't think he was very good at all yesterday. So, you know, you got some of the – I mean, I was doing the injury report yesterday for NHL.com and listing out the Predators, and I just kept typing and typing and typing. There was just all sorts of people on the injury list. Got a few of them back yesterday, and still, it just doesn't matter – what lineup they throw out there or what combinations they use, they just seem to have the same issue to begin games. And that has got to be very frustrating for David Poile when he watches this. And we talked about it earlier this week. I mean, David Poile was very interested to see what this next little stretch was going to look like from this group. And they're off to a rough start, 0-2. And my question is, like, at what point, if you're David Poile, have you seen enough? Because if you're not there yet, you are pretty, pretty close. And we'll discuss that when we come back. How much longer do the Predators have to salvage this before David Poile is forced to start making some moves? We'll discuss it next. Get your reaction as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning, talking some Nashville Predators hockey. Another loss for the Preds last night, 5-4 at the hands of the Florida Panthers. They'll take on Florida again tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. Preds dropped to 10-13-0 on the season. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ty texts in and says, "I love Grimaldi, but him not taking the shot on the breakaway basically summed up the Preds so far this season," and then in all capital letters, "disappointing." I remember what play Ty is talking about.
Yeah, he kind of went around instead.
Yeah, I mean,
around.
He didn't have a lot there.
He didn't have a great angle.
I would have liked to have seen him take the shot, but
the 5-on-3 to me was the
disappointment. The 5-on-3 was way worse, yeah.
So, you were tweeting earlier, and like, where the heck is Tolvanen? And then he got out there.
I don't know what was going on there, man.
Yeah. Well, then there was actually a perfect moment because they got it to him, but there was a perfect moment for Forsberg to find him. And I'd put it about 70% he buries it. And he just, I don't know if he didn't see him or he just didn't see a way to get it through to him, but he was all alone. But it was a bad 5-on-3. Their 5-on-4 has looked a lot better than that 5-on-3 looked last night.
Yeah. What was not a great 5-on-3. Yeah, Tolvanen. I mean, he had one good chance where he kind of brought it back into his body, tried to screen the goalie with the defender, and it was a good shot. Bobrovsky made a good save on it, but not a whole lot on that 5-on-3 power play. And it was just one of those things where, you know, it's 3-1, Ekholm scores, and you're like, okay, You get that power play, you feel like maybe you're giving yourself a chance.
And he
to
tried
crawl back in the game.
Sorry, he tried to pump everyone up too after that goal.
He did. Playing really well right now, by the way. 4 goals in 4 games.
He's on a heater.
He is on a heater.
He's looking awfully attractive to a lot of teams
yeah,
out there.
Looking very attractive out there, potentially to other teams around the league. But
there was another thought that I had. I think in the third period with Ekholm, I think he blocked a shot. He was like getting down on a penalty kill or whatever. I'm thinking, please do not get hurt.
Yeah,
like do not get hurt.
So when he was going to be a part of the Preds, you're fine with him getting hurt. But now that he's a trade commodity, you're like, oh hey. Please take care of yourself, Matias. Take care of yourself, buddy. Is that the deal?
You're making this too simplistic.
Oh.
You're never fine with anybody getting hurt.
No.
There you go. That's right.
Exactly.
But especially when there's a short window here in the next few weeks.
People you want to trade.
Man, I tell you what. I mean, he ripped it last night. That's a great shot by Ekholm. It really was. But just not enough of that. On the power play, I mean, that 5-on-3 wasn't good. I hear the frustration from Ty on the text line about Grimaldi. To me, that is way down the list of items to be frustrated about right now.
I mean, I guess I understand. It's kind of like, here's your chance, and then, wait, what are you doing? But, yeah, it looked for a
the
minute
angle
like
wasn't
it was
great.
Yeah, you know. Well, he didn't do much with it after he looped, you know, behind the net.
I think the pass went out of the zone after
that,
too.
So it's a little bad news bears-ish.
And then, I mean, speaking of injuries, like we talked about the guys that got back last night. Duchesne takes one shift in the third period and took a cross check to the back and went down the tunnel, did not play for the remainder of the third period. I think he came out and tried to test it one time, like during a TV timeout, and shook him off, went back down the tunnel, and that was it. So we'll see what happens now with Matt Duchesne, but you get Johansson back. Maybe you feel like you're starting to get more bodies back in your top six, and now you potentially lose Duchesne. We'll see what his status is for tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, you thought yesterday going into the game, it's like, well, there are actually some good news here for these guys, and they can't avoid more bad news piling up on them.
Yeah, not at all. And the question has become, if you're David Poile, like, when is enough going to be enough with this group? He talked about it earlier this week on Darren Donica Chase about the stretch they've got coming up with obviously some really good teams in Florida and Carolina and Tampa Bay. I would not classify Dallas as one of those right now with the way they've been playing as of late, but you know what Dallas is at least capable of. I mean, obviously a very important stretch coming up, and I just wonder if you're David Poile, if that decision hasn't already been made to be a seller, it can't be that far away. Like, and I think the things that people say publicly sometimes and the way they think privately are at times two different things.
Oh, no doubt.
But like I said it about a week and a half. It may have been last week at this time on the show. I've seen enough. I mean, this team to me, there's not a path out of this, I don't think, as currently constructed. And I just think you've reached the point where you've got to start selling off some of your assets. And I just wonder, it's one thing for me to say that. It's one thing for the fans to feel that way. Really, the only person whose opinion matters on this is David Poile. I wonder how much longer he is going to watch this before something starts to happen and some action starts to be taken. Because we've talked about, Joe, you don't have that much longer to start doing this before – you know, the trade deadline creeps up next month, but you've got the 2-week quarantine to think about too. Like, decision time is not that far away.
I mean, someone in Poile's position is obviously going to be the last person publicly to acknowledge this, right? I mean, if you're him and you're being asked right now, it's like, well, it's, you know, you want the team to play as well as they can, and you don't want to throw in the towel publicly on that. So I'm sure that there's a little difference in what he's saying and then what's being said behind closed doors. I'm sure there's been some phone conversations that would be very interesting for us to hear in recent days. So, I mean, to me, it's just a matter of who and when and what's the return. And I think we've kind of hit on the obvious ones. You know, the expiring contracts are obvious. And obviously, Matias Ekholm is going to be a very coveted ad for someone out there. And it's, you know, it's tough for a Preds fan to think about losing Matias Ekholm. I think Matias Ekholm is probably the most underrated guy of that whole core group that, you know, made that run and has been a very good team the last few years. He's probably the most underrated guy, right? But
yeah,
I think he's also like the hardcore Preds fan appreciates him.
Well, I think most people around the league are starting to realize just how good he is. I mean, he's a guy that could be, if not a number one defenseman on most teams, at least a first pair defenseman on both teams. So he's really good. Look, I mean, I've said it. I mean, people have come out with the untouchable list. Elliot Friedman talked about how Ellis is on that list. Ryan Ellis would not be on my list. And that's also the other unfortunate part of this is, like, look, I don't think the Predators would trade Ryan Ellis anyway. But now he's out 4 to 6 weeks. I mean, he's not getting traded. it's just not going to happen.
Right.
So Ekholm is a guy that still, I mean, I think he's really good. I think he can be really good for a long time. If you're the Predators, I would consider what it could look like to have him on the other side. But the more you think about what the return could be and the more time that goes by, the more I think that's the road we're approaching with Ekholm maybe being out of here.
So what if
him being on a heater right now doesn't hurt either?
Yeah. Well, what if Ellis is back, you know, April 1st or so, plays well? Because obviously, like, you know, buyers are buying to have immediate return. Buyers are buying to have something that makes their team instantly better and go into the postseason with that. But, you know, maybe he could come back, play well, show that he's healthy, and still get dealt by the actual trade deadline.
I would put that percentage at almost zero. Because Pierre LeBrun put it out on The Athletic here recently that it's probably not going to be as active of a trade deadline as normal years because of some of the salary cap implications, and a lot of teams' budgets are maxed out right now because of their, you know, internal budgets.
Right.
And the fact that Ellis is on the hook through 2027, I mean, that is a long, long time at 6.25. Yes, he's a good defenseman, but I don't think there's going to be a lot of teams craving
that deal
to trade for that contract.
Yeah,
especially mid-season.
So that's the thing. Yeah, I mean, Ellis as a quote unquote untouchable. It's more on the other side of the deal, though. It's more hard to trade a bull. You know,
that's good.
I mean, thanks. I mean, that's more. You know, it's not like the Preds. I mean, I think if the Preds got a good return and could move that contract right now, you tell me that they're like, no thanks, no way. I mean, I don't buy that.
I don't know, man. I mean, I agree with you. I wouldn't be that way. I thought Ryan Ellis was really good last year. I don't think he's been all that great this year when he's been in there. Like, so
he's a guy who's also has been hurt a lot.
Good player.
He's been hurt a lot.
Like, it's the idea that Ryan Ellis would be an untouchable, to me, just it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
But his injury history is one of the reasons why that contract looks bad.
Sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And that's not a knock on him, but if he can't stay healthy, then that contract in like 3 years is going to be an albatross.
Yeah. It's one of many reasons this team's in a tough spot here until they can totally change some things up.
Yeah, and we brought up the question of David Poile earlier in the segment, asking, you know, when is enough enough, and when do you start to maybe make decisions if you're David Poile? Elliot Friedman joins Darren Donick and Chase every Thursday at 1 o'clock and talked about David Poile and the approach that he could have as they move forward. Here's what Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet had to say.
Have you heard anything differently around the league of some players that might be available from Nashville?
Well, you know, I've reported that I thought it was pretty much everybody, except for the ones I mentioned, Rene, Yossi, and Ellis. I'll tell you, it was funny. I did have some other teams in the league kind of text me, are you sure about Ellis? And I go, well, that's just what I'm hearing. And so I wondered if some people like called the Predators, but I don't think he's going anywhere. And as you guys know, he's hurt right now, which adds another level to it. I think it just shows you the level of respect that Ellis has around the league. I think some guys are going to be much harder for other teams to pry out of Nashville than others. But I think everybody knows that David's listening. He's not afraid. And like when he says what he said the other day, I know sometimes some fans were like tweeting at me saying like he can't really not know what he's doing, right, or not see what we're all seeing. Of course he does. He's been around for a long time. He's very smart. He knows hockey. He just, you know, he's being careful. He's not going to pour gasoline on the fire. He realizes that this is a crazy year where things don't happen as normal. So he's just biding his time until he sees what's out there that he likes.
And to Elliot's point there, like, I had some people tweet me last night, like, how could Poile not see what's going on? How are they complacent with this? Look, and I've tried to explain it. Like, what they say publicly and what they actually do sometimes are two different things. Like, it's not usually in your best interest, if you're a general manager, to go on the radio or go in the media and just start trashing your team like the fans want you to do. Like,
hey, guys, you better play well tonight. I'm looking at trading four or five of you. But whichever ones of you play well, I won't trade you tomorrow.
It generally does not help you in trade discussions if you're having that. So, like,
you could also argue just don't talk.
Well,
and
yeah.
I'm not saying that David Poile should do that. I'm just saying you're going to get somebody mad either way. Right,
but, like, you know, and fans do this sometimes with the media, too. Like, why are you not just, like, crushing them right now? Like, what do you always say? Like, we've said...
Ask some tough questions.
You know, like, we've asked him everything you want to ask. Like, what do you want David Poile to do in this situation? Just go out and be like, yeah, you know, Matt Duchene doesn't pick it up. We're going to expose him to Seattle. Okay.
Right.
Like, what's that going to accomplish at this point? So, again, I understand the frustration. A lot of it is warranted. But just because David Poile in public comments is not, you know, actively laying out his trade plans to us does not mean that he is not thinking about this stuff.
Speaking of questions, so Vingan asked Hines about his job status last night.
He did. We'll get to that on the other side. We got to go to break right now, but that was brought up last night in the post-game press conference. We'll discuss that and more with the Nashville Predators coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, talking Nashville Predators hockey and taking your thoughts all show long on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Another tough loss for the Predators last night, 5-4 at the hands of the Florida Panthers. And Joe, you brought it up to end last segment, John Hines was asked yesterday about his job status. Adam Vingan, your colleague at The Athletic, asked the question in the post-game press conference about his job status and if he was feeling any heat at this point. Here was John Hines' response to that question.
John, how would you assess your coaching performance this season? And are you at all concerned about your status with the team being where it is in the standings?
No, I mean, we're focused on tonight's game and, you know, getting ready here tomorrow. And then we got Florida coming up on Saturday.
So that was John Hines' response after the game, which, hey, I don't know what you want him to say there.
He didn't answer the first part of the question.
No. But they do have...
Nor the second part.
Well, you're right, but I don't expect him to answer the second part.
Right. You mean, they are, you know, today, getting ready for the game tomorrow. It was a nice reminder of the schedule.
That is indeed true. Listen.
You got a preparation day today in Florida tomorrow.
All right, I'm going to say... Vingan's my buddy and my coworker. I think it's ridiculous to talk about. How could John Hines be like John Hines isolated and be fired in this situation?
Well, I'm not saying
that's ridiculous, huh?
I'm not saying he's gonna be. I'm just saying.
Well, I'm not saying you're saying he's gonna be, but I don't even. To me, the question is. I mean, I guess it's fair to say, are you worried? But I just think it's a ridiculous idea that John Hines would be scapegoated for what has happened with this franchise. Like, how could – like, David Poile fired Peter Laviolette, right?
Correct.
Hired John Hines.
Correct.
Chose John Hines. This is the coach who's going to lead us into the next era, John Hines. And then John Hines gets smoked a year later?
Like, I hear you. I mean, the time – look, like, especially with this franchise, like, obviously – they've had three coaches in the history of the franchise. They do not pull the trigger very quickly on getting rid of coaches. This is the third coach.
And you know, as Poile made clear when he fired Laviolette, I mean, I think he basically did say it. Like, I don't even want to fire him, but I can't fire all the players, right? But then, so then you did, and then you made this choice of coach. There's no way that, like, if there's anybody getting fired, David Poile should be fired before John Hines.
Well, maybe. But look, I'm not taking anything off the table right now. This constant theme that they have of not being able to come out and start games the right way, yes, it's on the players. And Arvidsson and Forsberg talked about that yesterday, about, you know, individual guys, they've got to be ready to play. And I fully believe that has not always been the case, or at least not the case to a high enough level to where it needs to be. That is also on the coaching. You have got to get your team ready to play, and that's not happening.
Yeah, listen, I'm not sitting here saying John Hines has been amazing and everyone else is screwing up and he's untouchable. Put him in a bubble. I'm just saying, if it's true that he's a problem and he's a big part of the problem here, then how big of a mess up was this that you chose him a year ago? When you, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, the order of this is like, wait a minute. Okay, let's get a different coach. Sorry, my bad. No, bring in a new coach a year later. No. I'm not saying John Hines is infallible or anything like that, but I'm just saying, like, I've seen a lot of this from Preds fans, like, this is all about Hines and this
the coach is always the first place you go to.
It's like, guys, let's look at the big picture and where things have been going. It's before he ever got here, they were going in this direction.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Bob from Antioch to the show. Bob, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Good morning, guys. The most glaring difference between the two teams last night that I saw was the speed. Florida just seems incredibly fast compared to the Predators. The Predators used to be considered a fast team themselves. Why do you think that the injuries have just mounted, and that's why they're not as fast as they used to be? And my other question is, Arvidsson is one of my favorite players, probably my favorite player on the team, but do you think they'll try to move him? And if they do, what do you think they can get for him?
Hey, thanks for the call, Bob. We appreciate it. I mean,
well, Joe, he just hit on a guy who used to be faster.
Yeah, I mean, he looks different. He does not look like the same guy. Now, 3 assists for Arvidsson last night. So, pretty good game for Victor Arvidsson last
night.
Making
some plays.
But to the larger body of work, he just doesn't look the same. He's got 2 goals, 23 games this year. It's not good enough. So, again, I mean, we had the untouchable conversation this time a year and a half ago, Victor Arvidsson, if he wasn't on my untouchable list, he was pretty close to it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just the contract has been so valuable. He's still not getting paid all that much money, and he's scored 30 goals a couple times. I mean, he's a really, really good player, but he just does not look the same. And when you start having conversations about members of the core that could be moved, if I'm the Predators, based on the trend that I've seen from Arvidsson of late, I am listening intently. I think there will still be teams out there that could give up a pretty good return for him. Like, it's not going to be as – like, if you decided to trade him after the President's Trophy season, you could have gotten a lot from Victor Arvidsson.
I mean,
it's not
going to
be that.
Yeah.
It's going to be less. But there was a point in time where – I mean, it would have been pretty close to like Philip Forsberg and what the offer would have needed to be for me to consider doing that and getting rid of Arvidsson. It's not that way anymore.
No, I agree. And it's interesting to think of what the market is for him. Like you said, that deal and how he has played. I mean, you're talking about a multi-30 goal season dude not long ago. I think you're getting a big haul, and it's going down. It's going down, of course. I mean, you and he's, to me, kind of like Ellis. Like, you love the smaller guys who are tough and go out there and give it back to people and are really good players. But both of those guys have also taken a ton of hits and have had real injuries because of it.
Well, and to Bob's question about the team speed, like, I think the actual foot speed itself is part of it. But a lot of playing fast in hockey is being confident with your decisions and moving the puck quickly up the ice. Like, it's not always about just having a bunch of burners out there. Like, Pittsburgh, I think, was a perfect example. Yes, I mean, they had players that were very, very fast. But, like, you know, Malkin and Crosby, they're not, like, just blowing by people.
They're great players.
They're great players. They make quick decisions. They're confident in what they're doing. And they just move the puck really, really well. To me, there's not much confidence out there watching this Predators team play. Number one, at times it looked like there's zero plan whatsoever, and they just are very, I think, fragile in terms of their confidence right now, and it's very difficult to play fast that way when you don't have confidence in what you're doing.
When they've looked their fastest, to me, is when that top line's been together. Arvidsson was faster, and Johansson was playing at his top level and doing exactly what you just said. So not only did they have the explosiveness on that line, they had him making great decisions with the puck and at times just amazing passes with the puck and putting them in position to score.
Yeah.
They looked devastatingly fast without necessarily being that. And you don't see much of that with this team.
Right. I mean they still got some quick players. I mean, Roman Josi is one of the best skaters in the league. I mean, he plays fast. Problem is, when you don't have a whole unit playing together and on the same page and playing fast, it can look rough out there at times. And I think that's been the case with the Predators a lot so far this season. We'll continue the conversation on the Predators on the other side of the break. Take your thoughts all show long on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. When we come back, we ask this question: how have the Predators gotten to this point so quickly? It looked like they were on their way to a golden era here in Nashville, and right now looks like it's going the opposite way. How did we get here? We'll discuss it next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing all things Nashville Predators. We'll take your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. And Joe, another tough loss for the Preds last night. They fall to 10-13-0 on the season. And with each passing game, it's looking more and more like a sell-off could be coming with some of their players on their roster. And with an eye towards the future, trying to figure out what the next few years could look like for this team. And the question is, that I think a lot of Predators fans are wondering, is how did they get here? How is this what we're seeing right now on the ice? Because you think back to 2017 and 2018, obviously the Cup Final, the President's Trophy, you felt like this team was ascending and getting to the point where they were about to enter into a golden era and maybe a championship era of hockey here in Nashville. And ever since that Dallas series, they've just been going progressively the other way. And it's interesting. Like, you look at the players that they've signed. I mean, Ellis is still in his early 30s. He's 30 years old. Roman Josi is 30 years old. Johansson's 28. Forsberg's 26. Arvidsson's 27. So it's not like they've got these guys as a part of their core that are just ancient and can't get it done and can't, you know, play anymore. They just lost their complete ability. They still, theoretically, should be in the primes of their careers, and the production for so many of these guys has just gone the other way. As you look at this team, the construction of this roster, the decisions both via trade and free agency, and with the coaching staff that have been made over the course of the last couple of seasons, as you try to put it all together, how have the Predators gotten to this point where now it looks like they're trending the other way?
Well, I'll go back to the end of the Dallas series. I remember being in Dallas watching Pecorine. I mean, I watched Pecorine play a lot of incredible games. Man, game – that was six, right? That was game six in Dallas. That's on the short list. Incredible. Incredible game by him. But that was sort of the question. Then it's like, man, you know, if they lose this, like how did this happen? I mean, you know, you have a random first round loss or whatever, but that team had even started to, that was the power play team. And I think that night I coined, because, you know, I love puns. I think I coined, and Porth, you should appreciate this, the term Albatross. Yes. You said albatross earlier in the show. I believe I coined,
I like that.
I believe in the Tennessean, the term albatross, because that's what I wrote about. It was like, this tourist deal has sent things going the wrong way, and I'm still pointing back to that. You know, the tourist deal, which I also remember probably all three. I know you were there. I was there. You were probably there, too. That press conference when they got Turris.
Yeah.
I mean, we may as well all just stood up and said, David Boyle, you genius, you. I mean, you know, so, hey, let's not pretend like, you know, we're doing anything but second guessing, but it's been a disaster. You know, that I mean, and the thing is, they buy him out so you get more space, but you're also still
paying
paying for that for years to come now. And what is Turris? Because I heard this. Oh, Lavi doesn't know how to use him, whatever. What is Turris?
He's got 3 points in 19 games.
There you go.
One goal, two assists.
There you go. So you thought you were getting something, and you got a sack of
potatoes.
Oats. Yeah, you know. So, I mean, there's one. The Hartman deal was...
I didn't know where you're going there.
You never know either. It's not seven yet, so we can say whatever we want, right? I mean, the Hartman deal is a real bad one. And then some of these guys we've talked about on this show today. I mean, Arvidsson looked like he was going one way, and that happens to players. I think you've had a few go that way. I know some people, and increasingly as Shea Weber plays well and all that, and he's back and he's a great leader, and people are going to look back at the Subban trade. I'll reject that forever. I'll reject the Johansson, Seth Jones stuff too. Those deals got you to the cup final. It got you very close to winning it all. But maybe there's a lack of leadership in the room. I think that that's overrated, frankly. Maybe they don't have the greatest situation in the world in that regard. But to me, it's do you have enough players who are good players in this league? And they don't. And some guys have declined, and obviously they've made some bad choices.
I mean, yeah. I mean, right now, I mean, we've got to throw the Duchesne part of that into it as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got 8 points in 23 games. Look, he joins us every week here on the show. We've talked to him about the chances that he's gotten and how frustrated he's been. And I recognize that. I think there have been times this year where he's played very well and has not been rewarded. I think as of late, it's been a bit of a disappearing act from Matt Duchesne. Now, part of that has been, what do you expect him to do on a line with Yarncroke and Grimaldi? I get it. I think that's a fair point. I think that's a fair criticism.
It hasn't been that every night.
It has been recently.
Right, but I'm saying this whole season.
Right, the whole season has not been that way at all. So, look, the chances are one thing. You got to find a way to start to produce. And right now, it's just not going well for him either. So, some of these contracts that you've signed, whether it's Duchesne, that's looking rough right now. Kyle Turris, we know that. I mean, it was bad. And even, you know, some of the trade deadline acquisitions. Like, think back to, you know, bringing in Wayne Simmonds.
Yeah, it didn't do much.
Granlund for a long stretch of time. Wasn't doing anything here with the Predators. I mean, Brian Boyle was okay when they brought him in.
Yeah, he was all right. I thought he helped a little bit that year. I go back to the night in Dallas, too. Probably the same column. It was like, well, Subban. I mean, we all knew it, and we had been talking about it. You got to move Subban and go get Duchesne, right? I mean, it was like very specific. It wasn't just like move Subban and go get someone else. It was move Subban and go get your white whale. Here you go, finally.
Matt Duchesne. By the way, at the time, was just lighting it up in the playoffs for Columbus.
Right. He was – that's the height of his career, right? Because it was – he's had good numbers and good seasons for a lot of bad teams. He was playing – number one center hockey producing for a team winning in the playoffs. And look, $8 million a year for two of these guys. If you want to go through all the numbers,
they've combined for four goals.
Right. Go through the rest of the league of guys who make that money.
It's not close.
I don't know that there's anybody else in the league. Maybe I'm forgetting someone here or there. But for the most part, people making that kind of money, they're all producing way more than these guys.
With the exception of Jeff Skinner, but yeah.
There you go.
Talk about an albatross.
Oh, man. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Bill text in, the smaller guys are hard workers and often productive during the regular season, but they're almost always neutralized in the playoffs. It's time to get bigger. Well, they did a little bit of that this offseason in trying to get bigger and more difficult to play against in playoff-style games. The problem is, you got to have, if you're going to get bigger, you still got to have skill to go with it. There's not a whole lot of those guys out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that
everybody wants Tom Wilson, but not a whole lot of Tom Wilson's growing on trees out there.
Yeah, and I think that point's more applicable to Arvidsson.
Yeah.
And what we've seen, I mean, Ryan Ellis has had some terrific postseasons. Different, you know, it's also different. You're talking about forwards versus defensemen in the postseason, but I'm just saying it's not like every small guy they've had. And shoot, Rocco Grimaldi was by far, let's go back to that night in Dallas, the only forward I saw all night or all series who did looked like a pro was Rocco Grimaldi. So
in this conversation, I keep going back to something that I've said recently on Preds Insiders, is that it feels like this is what we're watching right now is a product of the always chasing your own tail to find forwards because you haven't been able to draft your own star forwards. It's finally caught up to this franchise because, I mean, I made this point last week with Jared Stillman. The best forward that they've ever drafted for their own team is Victor Arvidsson. I mean, think about that. He holds the single-season record for goals. He was a fourth-round pick.
That's a heck of a pick.
It was a great pick. But that is the best forward that David Poile has drafted for this franchise. Alexander Radulov and Kevin Fiala are better talent, but their primes of their careers were not here in Nashville.
I'm not going to take Scott Hartnell slander here on the show.
Well, I mean, Scott Hartnell, great forward, but you know, Colin Wilson, Austin Watson, first-round picks that weren't first-round talents in the NHL. So you've gone all this time without drafting your own star forward, so you're making trades to find your own star forward. You have to give up Seth Jones to go get Ryan Johansson. You have to give up a King's Ransom to go get Kyle Turris.
At least you have an abundance of defensemen. You're incredible at that.
Had to give up Marty Rat to go get Philip Forsberg.
But, like,
oh, wait.
How nice would it be right now to have Sam Girard? Yeah. On this team.
Yeah.
And I know that's a lot of second guessing, but there have been a lot of moves that they have made to go get veteran players that have either been past their prime or at the end of their prime, and they come here and they haven't worked out.
A lot of moves to compensate for not being able to draft and develop forwards at the rate that they should. By the way, with Stillman, he's on vacation right now. Tell him to stop texting us. Stop texting us, Jared. Be on vacation.
We appreciate you listening to the show, Jared.
Go work out. Send us a sweaty video. Okay? We'll play the audio.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, you need Carl Taylor in here. Fire Hines. Quickly, the problem was Poile firing Laviolette and hiring Hines so fast. This is a GM and coaching issue.
So fast. I don't know about that, but yeah, look.
I don't know about, like, I have no idea what kind of an NHL coach Carl Taylor could be, but
I think what the texter is saying is that they fired Peter Laviolette, and within 12 hours, John Hines was their new full-time head coach. Okay. I think that's what he's saying.
I got you. Yep, I got you. I thought it was. Yeah, I thought he was saying fire Laviolette so fast. I get it. Yep, it was pretty much. That was all ready to go. Right. That's how I read it.
If not, it was really if not, great I was like, oh, recruiting.
Hey, I got to find a coach. Let's do some speed dating.
By the way, can we talk about how? The Calgary Flames last night put a 7 spot on the Ottawa Senators, and they're like, oh, yeah.
Fire a coach.
Jeff Ward, head coach, you're gone.
See you, buddy.
Here comes Daryl Sutter.
That's who people want in there. Daryl Sutter, baby.
Like, Jeff Ward has to be the first coach ever to have his team win a game 7-3 and then gets fired.
Gets canned.
To be fair, you should be putting 10 goals on Ottawa every night.
Yeah.
So they underachieved.
Averaging double digits.
I think Ottawa and the Red Wings, by the way, what? Goal differential 33 for the Wings, Ottawa 32. I think the only teams that are worse than the Preds at minus 18. Oh, no, I'm sorry, the Ducks. Let's give the Ducks their due. They are awfully bad.
Not very good. Let's go back quickly to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, you should have never fired Laviolette. I don't know about that.
Yeah, look.
I've discussed it before. The guy's got a shelf life.
I agree. Now, listen, I'm seeing weekly, like, Peter Laviolette is the coolest guy ever. He's incredible.
I don't know what's going on there.
Like he's just like Mr. Happy-Go-Lucky, doing all these amazing interviews. So now
tell me what people are saying this time 2 years from now.
Is this how he was when he first got here? When he first got here, was he like, hey, everybody, what's up?
I don't know.
I don't think he was to that extent.
Maybe he's a little bit more friendly now since Vingan was asking him about his job every second press conference last year.
I remember the Vingan morning.
Loves asking people about their job.
I remember the morning of like Peter Laviolette's third game. I asked him about the starting goalie for that night's game, and he just stared into my soul and said, "We don't we don't talk about starting goalies on Morning Skate.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay.
I mean, I would say that like LaViolette just must have hated the nasty Nashville media. But then you go back to the Stanley Cup final, and he won't just say, yeah, Pecorine is our starter. And then he scolds everyone because we made a story out of something that he made a story by just not telling us the obvious thing.
Right.
So the entire hockey media was like, lighten up, Lavi.
Yeah, come on.
And now all of a sudden he's just super – he's you know, Don Rickles up there.
Well, that goes back to your point earlier. Like, this was not – just smooth sailing when they made the decision to fire Peter Laviolette. It was trending this way. It has not gotten any better.
He's got a shelf life.
Yes.
This is there's been – and, I mean, it was unfair for him for sure with Milbury and the Islanders.
Yeah.
Right? That was unfair. But every other spot – and you could find people who still support him at these other spots, but he has a shelf life. And honestly, most coaches do.
Yeah.
But I think most coaches like him, who are very tough, hard-boiled coaches, but also do all the motivational. Yeah.
It wears thin after a while.
It wears thin.
We'll continue the Predators discussion throughout the show today, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. When we come back, we're going to switch gears and get into the Tennessee Titans, maybe some good news for the Titans yesterday. We'll talk about that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.